Blog Talk Radio.
What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio, and tonight is Tuesday, June 14th, 2022. And as usual, you are listening because you are someone that is concerned. If you are listening, you know we must do something about it. This is a program that analyzes the anatomy of oppression, and this program is trying to make you understand that you are not in a democracy, you are not free, you do not have a two-party system, your vote does not matter, and as some of our entertainers have said, they don't give a damn about us. And because of that, we're pushing back, we're fighting back, we're organizing, and we're not going to take it anymore. Tonight's theme says problem-solving while ignoring the underlying causes, such as guns, crime, racism, capitalism, colonialism, just doesn't work. And everybody on this call will give you some example of why we say the things we say. So without further ado, Brother Ralph Pointer, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters, and I thank you so much for tuning in because we have a lot of work to get done. As Sister Betty told us, what are we talking about? We're talking about an America that it fakes problem solving while ignoring the underlying causes. How can you solve the problem of guns when you ignore the underlying causes? How can you solve the problems of crime while you ignore the underlying causes? How can you solve the problem of racism, capitalism, etc., ignoring or continuing along the same path? And we talk about how can we take seriously the United Nations reports of rape and genocide when we remember the United Nations troop conduct in Haiti. Remember cholera brought to Haiti by United Nations troops, and with the United Nations taking no responsibility or action. That's most outrageous. And it becomes even more outrageous when we're talking about an organization that says they have a book on the conduct of people. They are the most outrageous violators of any type of decent conduct. And so we can't cover it all. And so we look to you to tell us what you think about this, these situations. Could it be that the number of deaths in Ukraine pale so greatly to the deaths in the Congo, Zaire, and the surrounding countries, Rwanda, Ethiopia, Yemen? And that has a tendency when you hear numbers 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, and we say, well, that's just those people. And we know who those people are. But then when it comes to COVID in America, the number of people who die, and then we have the situation where the government says they don't have enough money to go on to the next level of shots. You know, if you've had your booster, your two shots and your booster, then it is recommended by some that we have more. And then the government says, we can't afford that. And then you begin to wonder what our government is all about. And it is about what it has always been about. It is about the rich and famous. And what is the problem with those of us down here on the ground? Well, so many of us say, well, I'm going to become rich and famous and ignore the rest of the people just like the rich and famous do. I remember once, many years ago, it was around 1965, in the height of our revolutionary movement in America, where people of color were angry and looking to do something about it. Liberals, flower children, people were angry and were working on doing something about it. And I remember having a conversation with Roy Ennis. He was the head of CORE, Manhattan CORE. And he said to me, what is the role of the people of color who were working? I guess that would be the petty bourgeois, working to improve things. And I'm saying, to make things better for everyone. And he says, no, you got it wrong. You're in a capitalist society. And in a capitalist society, what it is for the rich and those who have a few ideas about where things really are to take advantage of the rest. He says, for example, what does Rockefeller have to do with the people of West Virginia? And my answer was, I don't know that he has anything to do with the people of West Virginia. And his answer was, he has the ability to oppress them, and he does, and he makes money on them, and he cares not about their health and welfare. And he says, in a capitalist society, we should become black capitalists. And this is the problem we have. Nobody says that anymore. No one says, I want to be a colonial administrator. But it is in our DNA in America. So many of us, want to become colonial administrators. So many of us want to become capitalists, black, brown, white, etc. So many of us go to church every Sunday, go to mosque, go to synagogue, and we leave everything we supposedly learn in these institutions of what would we say, philosophy, and then we go about the business of getting a dollar, taking care of oneself. Well, we want to cut through that, and we have so many problems that I say I'm looking forward to hear your answers, because it becomes overwhelming to me. And so, one more time, for these 2 short hours on Tuesday night from 9 to 10 on Wednesday night at WBAI FM radio from 8 to 9, please, my brothers and sisters, call, educate all of those out there. We're spreading ourselves far and wide. This program is heard throughout the country. And so I look forward to some answers from my comrades, from my sisters and brothers who have worked and given their all to make America, to make the world a better place, a place where no baby goes hungry. And that brings me to right here in America, where everything is available. They end up making formula for babies. We find out first it was 3 babies died, then they say 10 babies died, then 20 babies. And I'm saying, how many babies really died from this formula that was tainted in spite of the reality that somebody was talking about it a year ago? Of course, they fired that person who worked in the factory who talked about it. But we go back to our so-called liberal and enlightened Democratic Party, Mr. Obama, who was death on whistleblowers. But let us never forget the person who told us the truth, Julian Assange. They're trying to kill him, and they're talking about the people who were killed in Brazil, the reporters who were disappeared in the jungles of Brazil. And I'm saying, you don't have to go to the jungles of Brazil. Just look right here in good old America, Washington, D.C. Look right here at the Democratic Party, who they say they're in control. Look right here when the Republican Party was in control, and they didn't make pretend. They just said, we're going after the whistleblowers. We're going after the truth tellers. And Snowden, and he says, you know, you people are crazy with this Facebook, putting your pictures in there, putting everything in there. He got out of town, because if he wasn't out of town in Russia, he would be in the same position that Julian Assange is in. They're looking to kill him. And what does that mean to you and me and the rest of our comrades? Our comrades, we say we must fight it, but we are small in number. We must grow. We must educate. We must make people understand that Julian Assange is us, the same as all of our political prisoners who we ignore constantly. We talk about going to the UN. We talk about getting reparations. You ever heard that word? A lot of people talk about reparations. But my brothers and sisters, I have a list of reparations, and you're going to be stuck with it if you tune in on these programs, because my list begins with, if you really believe in reparations, numero uno, free our political prisoners, those who gave everything, who saw everything, who spoke about it, and gave their lives for us. Free all political prisoners now. Under that point A, those victims of the political system, and I say those with minor drug situations, who were incarcerated, And we know, as I said many, many years ago, 50, 60 years ago, there was never a war on drugs. There was a war on us, and they used drugs as the excuse. And you know, I'm telling the truth because of the opioid situation. Did they put those people in jail? No. What was the difference? Color. And so we have these problems to deal with, and we're going to be dealing with them. We can't deal with them all this evening. And we have wonderful guests. As you know, just come, listen to our guests, listen to yourselves. You're going to give us some answers. And with that said, Sister Betty.
We always start our program with poetry, but before we go to our political prisoner who recites some wonderful poems for us, I'd like to remind you that no struggle is too small. If you're fighting for education, you belong here. If you're fighting for housing, you belong here. If you're fighting against the death rate, COVID, in the death camps called prisons in this country, you belong here, and you are welcome. So without further ado, we always acknowledge the love of one of our political prisoners, comrades who the movement liberated, who has transitioned, Sister Nguyen, and we honor her by having a poet in residence, and we are always honored when they help soothe our souls. All right, comrade, your mic is open. We want to hear your poem.
7785.
Good evening. Yes, listening to the very sharp and clear words about the system as a whole and the fact that we have to see problems not one at a time, as was mentioned. We have to see them as many different aspects of the basic problem. The basic problem is a white supremacist-based ideological capitalist system that's called the United States of America. We live here, we get exploited here, we get oppressed here, and it goes across the board. Certainly people of color by far the most, but all poor and working people become the victims. But they try to keep us against each other, fighting each other, because that's the only way they can keep the system going. But I don't want to waste time because I know there's lots of good words coming up. So I have two really great poems by Sada Shakur. One is very short, which I'll read at the end. The other is a longer one, but it's so much in line with exactly what we're just talking about earlier. And since it's by Sister Asada, a revolutionary, beautiful woman, struggler, fighter, I have asked Gloria, a friend, another revolutionary-minded woman, sister, to read her poem now.
Dishing, a poem by Asada Shakur. Carry it on now. Carry it on. Carry it on now. Carry it on. Carry on the tradition. There were black people since the childhood of time who carried it on in Ghana and Maui and Timbuktu. We carried it on, carried on the tradition. We hid in the bush when the slave masters came, holding spear. When the moment was ripe, leaped out and lanced the lifeblood out of our would-be masters. We carried it on slave ships, hurling ourselves into ocean, slitting the throats of our captors. We took their whips and their ships. Blood flowed in the Atlantic, and it wasn't all ours. We carried it on. Fed Missy arsenic apple pie, stole the axes from the shed, went and chopped off master's head. We ran. We fought. We organized the railroad and underground. We carried it on. In newspapers, in meetings, in arguments and street fights, we carried it on. In tales told to children, in chants and cantatas, in poems and blues songs and saxophone screams, we carried it on. In classrooms, in churches, in courtrooms, in prisons. We carried it on soapboxes and picket lines, welfare lines, unemployment, our lives on the line. We carried it on. In sit-ins, pray-ins, and march-ins, and die-ins, we carried it on. On cold Missouri midnights, pitting the shotguns against lynch mobs, on burning Brooklyn streets, pitting rocks against rifles, we carried it on. Against water hoses and bulldogs, against nightsticks and bullets, against tanks and tear gas, needles and nooses, bombs and birth control, we carried it on. In Selma, San Juan, Mozambique, Mississippi, in Brazil, and in Boston, we carried it on. Through the lies and the sellouts, the mistakes and the madness, through pain, hunger, and frustration, we carried it on. Carried on the tradition, carried a strong tradition, carried a proud tradition, carried a black tradition. Carry it on. Pass it down to the children, down. Carry it on. Carry it on now. Carry it on to freedom.
Yes, that's just what we're talking about here tonight. And let me just end with a short poem. And this is certainly a poem that Asada probably wrote when she was in captivity in the death camps herself, before people reached out and went in there, liberated her, and she's still liberated today. The name of the poem is called Love. Love is contraband in hell, 'cause love is an acid that eats away bars. But you, me, and tomorrow hold hands and make vows that struggle will multiply. The hacksaw has two blades. The shotgun has two barrels. We are a conspiracy.
It needs no interpretation, either of those poems, but they are merely reminders that we must go to constantly. The program is archived. You can dial it up and listen to both of those poems. Thank you, my brothers and sisters, my sisters and brothers. The struggle continues. Sister Betty.
Before we go, we have a very special guest that has to get on. We're going to open up all the mics of our political prisoners, but I just want to alert you as to why our political prisoners are so important. You know about there's a bill in the Senate now, in Congress rather, dealing with the whole concept of COINTELPRO. And there's a movement by Black Justice Advocacy and an Action Alert to pass H.R. 2998, COINTELPRO Full Disclosure Act. And before I introduce our warriors on the front lines of freeing political prisoners and on the struggle for human rights all over the world, I want you to know that we've got a whole new set of political prisoners that the government is harassing and surveilling and intending to put under the prison for misdemeanor charges. They're calling for grand jury for political people. And they're especially extra surveillance of people who are standing up for human rights in Washington, D.C. And you can understand why they want to capture all of these people if they want another coup like July 6th. So it pays for you to free the ones that are there now, because they're just going full steam ahead, putting more in there, death camps. So without further ado, I want to open up the mic for our political prisoners, warriors on the front lines to freedom. We've got New York City Jericho in the house, Sister Ann Lamb, and we've got another member of our movement who's very much on the front lines for Comrade Mamia Abu-Jamal, Sister Suzanne Ross, And we've got someone who is no stranger to us, who is always on the front lines in New York City, Brother Gil Over. And we're going to let Sister Ross start off, but please be aware that we've got a big report of political prisoners. And thank you for coming on, and please give us your news. And then Ann, and then Gil. Thank you, Suzanne.
Good evening, everybody. Wow, that was an earful that I just heard the last 10 minutes. That was a lot, but I wasn't that aware about the grand jury stuff, so that's new, and I got to check it out. I went to see, I visited Mumia yesterday, and I wanted to share it with people because, you know, what I learned and what I saw, because people always wonder about what's happening. And when I, the first few people I called just individually after the visit yesterday, people said, oh my God, it's so good to hear this and, you know, share it. And so I realized I should share it more broadly. So first of all, about, I'll start with what I think is the most important thing. And that's my priority, because it's the fight, the fight. Mumia is in a battle for his life, of course, and I'm not talking about only his health, but politically, because they're still trying to kill him. And he has brought a legal suit with Brett Grody, the wonderful, wonderful, militant, incredible fighting lawyer, Brett Grody. For those of you who haven't seen him in court, go see him. He's young, he's small in size, and huge, huge in message in the courtroom, and also heads the Abolition Center in Pennsylvania. So he is working with Mumia on bringing, and they have, this has happened already, they have brought a suit against the Department of Corrections for ignoring Mumia's doctor's orders regarding the diet he needs for his heart condition. All of you remember that he had a very serious heart heart attack, had to have triple bypass, I think it was. I can't remember at this point, but whether it was triple or quadruple, but it was a major, major surgery. And subsequent to that, you know, you're supposed to be on a diet for, you know, if you have a heart condition, for any health condition, you're supposed to have a good diet. And the prison diet, we know, is poison. It's poison. It's poisonous. And it's, if Umia stays on that diet, it'll kill him. It'll kill him. So they're bringing a legal suit against the Department of Corrections for not providing what the doctor specifically ordered in writing. And, you know, there's a long tradition in the prison system, where they say prisoners are not entitled to the same rights, human rights, that those outside are. Not that the rest of us get such great guarantees of human rights, but the argument that the people in prison aren't even entitled to that has been made many, many times. And there was a legal suit, and of course Mumia found it, on the issue of, in addition to his own suit regarding the hepatitis C situation, as many of you remember, about 5 years ago, but there was a case specifically of somebody asking for a certain diet and being told that he wasn't entitled to that, and the courts ruled against the prison system. They said that prisoners do have the same rights. So that's on paper now. Anyway, this is a wonderful, I was so happy to hear it, because we need that kind of fight coming from Mumia with Brett Grody is a challenge, will make noise, and hopefully, my guess is that they're going to win and that Mumia will ultimately get the diet he's supposed to get. Now, the other things that are happening with Mumia, that the reason I start with that, of course, is because of the issue of battle, fighting, the struggle, what Asada just talked about, and what everybody on this program, on this, you know, is interested in, the fight back, the struggle. So there was a Mumia's condition, in terms of his physical condition, he is, for the first time in all the years since the struggle around hepatitis C, when Mumia had such a horrible skin problem, horrible with oozing skin and constant itching, for the first time in all those years that I visited him and heard about this and everybody else found out about this, he is literally hardly itching at all. And that sounds, you know, itching can sound very minor, but of course it's not. If you're in prison all day and if you have no relief and you're itching all night and so on, you can't sleep. So it had huge, huge ramifications and a huge effect on Mumia. And he looked really happy to be finished with that. His heart is in excellent condition. The recent assessment of his heart condition is excellent. He walks all the time. He says he walks and walks. He lost a lot of weight during the heart crisis, and he has kept that weight under control. So he's 50 pounds lighter than he was before the heart crisis, and feels much better because of that as well. So all of those things are good signs, and you know, I just want to share that with the audience because people worry so much. The skin, the heart, the weight, all of those are important. And I just want to refer people to please check out a message that Mumia just sent out last week to the workers. I don't know how many of you have been following the incredible, incredible resistance in Latin America to U.S. imperialism and to the summit that Biden called, which he excluded Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua from. And lo and behold, not only did the president of Mexico, and this was being held in L.A., right on the...
Ben, we've
right
a lot of people on the call. I don't mean to be rude, but you've got two other comrades who want to report on political prisons, and we've got a host of serious issues that people are struggling against and need to announce on our program.
Okay.
So
I will stop.
You want to refer them
check
to that link.
Yes,
that was
yes. Go to prison radio. Go to prison radio. Look at the message that was recorded last week, and it's called The Empire is in the title. And you'll see a wonderful summary about the struggle to fight back against the empire. Okay, thank you so much for allowing me to give this update.
And before you
and
go,
Mumia
I want to mention
love to all of you.
Suzanne, before
yes.
you go, you might want to mention Mumia's book on the empire, the last two books.
Yes,
because I think
yes, yes.
It covers and
okay.
Updated. What's happening in the world
yes.
today in that book?
That book is very, very timely. It's a three-volume book that Mumia wrote with Stephen Victoria, and it's called Murder Incorporated. What could be a better title? Okay, so that is available, can be gotten in lots of places, can be gotten ordered online and so on, and from prison radio, and that's about imperialism. So Mumia always has his eye on the empire. And
all right,
what,
we have
what
an organization.
Thank you.
People can contact you at Suzanne. They want to follow up with you further.
Okay, well, people can, I work with International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Right now, I'm occupied with another project, but you can reach me at 917-584-2135. And, of course, there's a regular fear, love not fear. Love not fear has regular phone calls. And July 3rd, there's a big, big protest, the usual July 4th when Mumia was originally sentenced to death, and also the next court hearing is on June 29th. Gil is on the phone and can talk about the
he's
buses
pick that
he's
up for you.
Okay, so I don't have to say anything about it. So there's things
no,
happening in this month. Okay.
And so does
that's
Anne.
It. Thank you.
Back again and tell us more, Suzanne. Sorry we have to rush tonight, though.
Listen, thank you for giving me the time. Bye-bye.
All right. Anne, your mic is open. Gil, hang in there. Anne?
Thank you so much, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. I will try not to be too long, but we do have an update on our young friend Eric King. Remember, we've been talking about Eric King for a while now. So the ABC folks just put out their newsletter, and they are reporting that FCI Englewood started Eric's transfer to the ADX, also known as the Alcatraz of the Rockies, before his recent trial ever started. So when Eric arrived at USP Lee after a recent acquittal at trial in March 2022, he was not allowed to walk the yard. He was informed he was on a special hold. So at the transfer center at USP Atlanta, before reaching USP Lee, the BOP deleted Eric's management variable, making him maximum security custody. He was told that he cannot be transferred and cannot be placed in general population. Eric currently has medium security points, and it's been confirmed there's no management variable, yet somehow the BOP hasn't classified as maximum security custody, right? So, you know, he went back to USP Lee despite the fact that he had serious threats on his life. There's a bunch of write-ups. I will post this up on the website so people can read it. And now he's being referred from USP Lee to the Florence AdMax, okay? Now, why does a man who has medium classification need to be locked up in a supermax? So FIC Englewood shipped USP Lee in 2022 a hard copy folder of an ADX supermax designation referral already in process for Eric. It seems BOP attorneys may have begun the process of a supermax custody transfer prior to Eric ever stepping foot in the courtroom for trial and acquittal in March. USP Lee has completed Eric's psych exam, intake interview, and sent Eric's ADX Supermax referral off for a final decision on transfer. The Supermax control unit was built to handle prisoners with incredibly long sentences or life in prison. So it seems a little odd, so soon after Eric's acquittal, that he chose the ADX. We're 1 year and 7 months away from Eric's release date, but he's placed in absolute segregation at the ADX Supermax. So this, Eric wanted to share these. He wanted to know that his pending ADX transfer is very real. Eric is at medium security points. At mediums of points with no management variable, a prisoner must be held at appropriate custody. Yet he is currently being held in maximum custody at USP Lee in segregation and pending transfer to the ADX Supermax Florence. Eric is not receiving any mail, no phone, and no visits. He has no sanctions on phones, yet has not been allowed a phone call to his family. The library at USP Lee is closed. Prisoners in segregation at USP Lee are not allowed visits. Despite the fact Eric has no visiting sanctions and did not currently ask to be placed in SHU, he is going to be held without any access to visits. That's very brief here from Eric himself. Things here are exactly as predicted. This is mentally and physically exhausting. Some same horrible food, finger toothbrush with expired quote-unquote toothpaste, no family visits, no library, no phone calls, and seemingly no family man. Yes?
And 10 seconds. Understand what our dear sister Lynn told us. The law is whatever they say it is at any given time. We can't depend on it. We
and
must understand.
This is showing us that he's got lawyers and everything behind him, and they're still doing this.
Yes.
What do you want us to do? What can we do right now for him, Ann? Because this is serious. But all of our political prisoners are going through this. So
yes,
I remember when
he's the only one
going through this. What do you want us to do right now?
Well, unfortunately, they don't say what they want people to do right now. But I would say people should do is write to Eric. Write to Eric, even if he's not getting mail. Write to Eric where he is now at USP Lee. And just let him know that we know what's going on and that we're very concerned. And, you know, just let him know that people are out here for him. Even if he never sees the mail, they see the mail when it comes in.
On the Jericho website.
I am putting it on the Jericho website, but his address definitely is on the Jericho website.
Thank you so much.
And what about Sundiata Akoli? Do we have an update on how he's feeling?
Well, I heard he's very happy to be home, and he's spending time with his family, And, of course, his support committee is still encouraging people to make donations. You can go to Sundiata Coley FC and hit the donate button. You can also hit the donate button on jerichony.org because we have it up there as well, right on the front page. And it's rather extensive.
Repeat the donation information again, because this is very important.
All right. If all donations received will go to Sundiata's family to care for him. So there's a little tiny URL that you can click at, Sundiata Home. And that is right on jerichony.org, right on the front page. It says Sundiata Coley is home with his family. Has a little, you know, update on that. And then they're asking for the donations because, as you know, in prison, there's no 401k, it's no saving plans, and no pensions. So it's up to all of us to provide that for his family.
Thank you so much for that. And we must all remember, what is the number one demand in reparations? Freedom for our political prisoners. If you believe in reparations, freedom for our political prisoners. Gil Obler, your microphone is open.
Yeah, hi, thank you. First of all, I just wanted to thank Suzanne for that update on Mumia's condition. It's really good to hear that. The skin condition was of great concern to us this spring ever since the ultraviolet treatment that Mumia was getting for that. The machine broke. We complained. The prisons lied to us and told us it was working. It wasn't. A recent trip that I took to the prison with Marae Fanon, she confirmed that finally it was really working. So it's good to hear about a month later that his skin condition has improved. And it's clearly because of the ultraviolet treatment being resumed. I'm here mainly to talk about the Free Mumia Coalition here in New York, but I've also started working with the Jericho Movement with Ann Lamb, who's just on, and I'm also helping Stand with Assange New York, which is a new support group for Julian Assange being organized in New York, and I'm helping them with a website and email list and other technology. But the main thing is Suzanne already mentioned, the next court date for Mumia is June 29th. This is a different suit than she talked about. This is the suit based on the six boxes of suppressed evidence that were, quote-unquote, discovered by D.A. Krasner in response to our previous lawsuit around the recusal issue. In his appeals. So that's, I'm not sure if we're going to be allowed in the courtroom, but there'll definitely be a court presence in the street outside the courtroom on June 29th in the morning. And that same week is the more important event that she mentioned, which is Sunday, July 3rd. We're having a big major protest in Philadelphia. I'm arranging transportation for folks here in New York, the Free Mumia Coalition. So if you go to freemumia.com on the events calendar and soon an article, there's information about joining us. We're going to meet at 9:30 in the morning on the northeast corner of Union Square at 17th Street and Park Avenue South, or Union Square East. It has multiple names there. But that's where we've been meeting lately, and we're going to be meeting there at 9:30, hopefully departing around 10 or 10:30 in the morning to go down to Philadelphia for that protest, and that's July 3rd. If you go to the website, you'll see that you can arrange transportation with us. There'll be at least one charter bus and possibly other vehicles going down there from Union Square down to Philadelphia for that protest. And you can write to bus, B-U-S, at freemumia.com or call the hotline 212-330-8029 to arrange a space on the vehicles going down, the bus and other vehicles going down on July 3rd. So I hope you can all join us there for that. Sorry, go ahead.
What time are the buses leaving?
We hope to leave around 10 a.m., 10:30. But we're gathering at 9:30 on Sunday morning. And Union Square,
right.
You know, that time of day should be easy to get to.
We want to thank all of our political prisoners, warriors who are on the front lines and have been successful in bringing some of them home, as you hear Sister Ann tell you. I want to further let Sister Ann and Comrade Suzanne know I've sent you the link regarding the COINTELPRO initiative and the organizers of that group, including Sunni Bilal Ali.
Bilal Suni Ali
are asking for your support, and I was on a Zoom with them today. I will be sending you the minutes. And I hope that we can support this initiative. They're asking for it because the government is spreading a wide net against black so-called identity extremists and anyone of their allies, European Americans, who stand up against fascism. So you will be getting the minutes as soon as they're forwarded from me. And Jericho and Suzanne, we hope you will be able to join in also. I just sent you the text. Without further ado, we have another special guest, and we're asking everybody to please hang in there with us tonight. We're going to introduce our dear brother, Johnny Stevens, and he's got a special report to give us. The name of his organization, he will tell you more about it. We need you to really pay attention. It's 282. Your mic is open. Thank you for waiting.
2862. Your mic is open. Hello, Johnny.
Johnny Stevens.
All right. We're going to have to move on. How can that be? You just called.
Okay, well, we're going to move on because we have a lot of people who are waiting in the queue. I just saw another advocate for political prisoners, boss.
Hello, how's that?
Yes, can you hear me?
No, I hear you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Hello, Sister Betty and Ralph. Thank you.
Yes.
I'd like to thank everybody on the political prisoners and Suzanne, Ann, and Gil, and all the great work. I'd like to give a report on Buffalo, our recent mass murder, white supremacist attack on black people, which has been continuing, you know, since January the 1st, Black Lives Matter, you know, the many murders that's been carried out by the police in the last years. But this particular incident happened to one of our historical cities, Buffalo, which I grew up in 1968 when Martin Luther King, the 5th, April the 5th, was assassinated and saw tanks in the street and learned what was Buffalo and what was the fight back. And since then, there has been beatings, attacks, redlining, blockbusting, expressways has been ran through the neighborhood. And this is all a part of what's happening in Buffalo now with the latest attack of this white supremacist murdering 10 people and injuring 13, which we should give our solidarity and condolence to those families. I'd like to tell you a couple of things those families are doing immediately. They have very much been a part of a march that happened on the 12th of June by the New York Peace Council Committee, which they said these marches took place nationally as a question on gun control. But in Buffalo, it was on the question of fighting white supremacies, fighting the whole terror of the police community and how this white racist was actually handled during the attack. One of the council, one of the caucus person, Crystal People, which I grew up with in Buffalo years ago, 37 years ago, actually said they handled out my nephew very violently, but they just picked this guy up after the bodies is laying up all over the street on Jefferson Avenue in Buffalo. This is what's going on. Buffalo has been originally a lot of Nazi Germany was actually transferred to Buffalo. The Fruit Belt was a community which we, where they drew the expressway through that tore up the black community. We were a part of that particular community and was displaced by tens of thousands. And this happened in 68. And since then, the violence has been taking place in Buffalo. I was there when the 22 caliber killer bullet in 1980 actually took place. Matter of fact, I was one of the cab drivers who almost was that night attacked and heart cut out. I gave the job to Shorty because I was making more money driving cab that particular meeting. The 22 caliber killer, Joseph Christopher, killed 7 black men in Buffalo, 2 Latino X in New York, and 1 black person, and a person in Fort Benning, Georgia, and he was taken to court in a mask, and no one really knew who he was. So when we look at what happened in Charlotte in the church in South Carolina where Dylan Roth was given a hamburger, this guy was picked up, we see what happened with the police brutality. Matter of fact, when the 22 caliber killer was going on and the 7 black people was murdered, the police actually had a slowdown because the black community had just had a victory with Alpha Eve in the primary of being the first black person to attempt to be the mayor in Buffalo. Even though this murder was taken on, the police actually had a worker slowdown, and you had groups that was called gangs that was created by the Vietnam War, body bags being come home in the black community. We were called gangs, and I was part of them, the New Vision Unlimited, 38 youth gangs of black, Latin, Puerto Rican, Native American, Italians. We formed the New Vision Unlimited and actually became a part of patrolling the area where the 22 caliber killer was actually shooting people because the police had a work slowdown. This is the stuff that we're going through. So now when we see the attack and the murder of 10 people and 3 survivors, we must announce that these survivors and and some of the people of the victim, they're filing suits now, lawsuits for libel, but not only lawsuits, they're filing suits against Twit that actually carried this racist lie. They're filing suit against the video game that actually allowed this to happen. And they're asking that it be corporation and billing, not only bringing tops back to the market, which is the only supermarket from 1980 to now of a food desert of one of the largest black community in the country. But we got to remember, Tops is a monopoly. Tops is all over Buffalo and all over the country and all over the world. And even though Tops was in the black community in Buffalo and prevented the food desert, it also was a place where we got the worst food and the worst vitamins, the worst vegetarian food. So we're trying to get now with 9 African groups from the Congo, the Ethiopia, the Kenya. 9 African groups is opening up a co-op on the west side and offering to open up a co-op on the east side, so it won't be only Tops that actually has access to raising the price to people whenever they want, because they're the only supermarket that's actually happening there. Those are the things that's happening in Buffalo. I would say again that the march that happened today that preceded the march that was called by the Black and Latin and Asian Caucus, that was called by Crystal People on May the 17th, Crystal People, Jose Avila in the Bronx, and also Lou, to actually have a march from the Bronx to Rochester to Buffalo, because the Bronx is where asthma is incredible and the expressway ran through the neighborhood. And Buffalo, the Kingston expressway ran through the neighborhood. And in that housing process, the asthma is the same. They wanted to draw those particular parallels. But that particular march, I think, was shut down. And this is my thought as Picture the Struggle, Johnny Stevens, visiting Buffalo on June the 2nd and the 3rd, it was my view that when Biden went, then later Harris went for the last funeral, happened of the 10, that particular important march that was called by the legislators was actually crushed, and the march for June the 11th actually became a reality. And not that the march for June the 11th is not important, but it was built around more gun control rather than the question of systemic racism and domestic terrorism that's happening in this country from south to west and so forth. So those are some of the things that's happening in Buffalo, and I know people are really ready to dive in weeks to come to really be a part of it. But we're asking people to come and actually get in touch with these groups that are actually having action, but also to bring some level of cooperation and materialism to them other than a march. Volunteer to work with the African community on farm co-ops and then attend the march and so forth, so they could have something that breaks this monopoly and racism on their lives. Those are the very the crucial development I think that's happening now and that people really need to pay attention to. Now, let me say finally, because this is a very important program, recently it's a sister that ran for mayor in Buffalo. Excuse me?
Please, continue.
And she actually, Enya Watson, Walton, actually ran for mayor in Buffalo and won the primary election. Her election was so important that the establishment in the Democratic Party, who actually had a black mayor, Brown, in for 12 years, who my sister went to school with, that particular election was teamed up with the Republican Party and defeated this sister who ran in the primary. The same thing happened when Afo Eve, a black person, ran in the 80s when a white supremacist attack was going on. In the 80s, the white supremacists not only killed 7 people, the Klan had a march on Jefferson Avenue right where people are at now, and the Klan went to City Hall in 1980. It was a very important demonstration that happened there in 81, and that demonstration gave some sort of hold to community groups and labor and actually to have a fight back against racism. And we need another call like that, not only a demonstration, but a town hall meeting or people assembly to assist the people in Buffalo. We got to remember what happened in New Orleans. Everything became private. There's no unions. It's total displacement. And this is an area I think that we really need to rush forward to. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And we must remember, as can hear, this is not just Buffalo, this is not just Florida, this is not just, you know, Pittsburgh, this is all over the country, and we must also understand, in the 60s, Martin Sostre, up there in Buffalo, in the bookstore that exists today, was a center of resistance, and support struggles that continue, for the struggle does continue, but we must do more winning. Thank you so much for that report from Boston, Johnny Stevens, and Sister Betty.
Okay, Brother Johnny, do you have a contact number that you want people to call if they want to help organize? Is there a contact number?
Yes, you can call me at 917-402-4755, and I'm looking for the New York number. I can call the New York number for the WNY Peace Committee is 917-348-2635.
917-348-2635. Give that number a call and join in with the struggle on Buffalo. Thank you so much for that, Brother Stevens. Sister Betty.
All right, Brother Stevens, don't be a stranger. You've got what we call comrades here who have a history of struggle. And when you hear Ann, when you hear Ann, when you hear Gil, you're talking about people who've been on the front lines for against fascism and racism for a long time. So we're pleased that you called in, and please call back again. Brother Kazi, Boston, Jericho in the house. We did not mean to ignore you. Please, if you want to give a report, go now.
No, sister, you didn't ignore me. I was driving, but I was just listening. But I do want to say a couple of things about one thing about Buffalo and Mumia and political prisons is that I remember in 78, men had their hearts cut out in Buffalo. You know, it was happening every other week. And I don't know if it was around the same time that this 22 killer was going on. But it was in 78. Yeah, same time that the babies was missing in Atlanta, 28 babies. Mm-hmm. And the same time 14 black women was killed in Boston. And stuff was going on, but we didn't have the media to connect the dots, you know, like we do today. So, I mean, this stuff, fascism is here, man. You know, people can't recognize it, you know, and I mean, forget about petitions and demonstrations. You know, it's got to be tit for tat. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
That's all I can say for about it. But, and, you know, the other thing is Mumia and Brother Matulu, man, it's really important. I mean, get the funds to Sundiata, but we got to get them brothers out, Mumia and Matulu.
Yes.
We got to get
and
them out
I
now.
Say, every day I feel shame that we, the people, still run out and vote for the Democratic Party because of some nonsense afraid of Trump. Well, we've had Trumpism since the inception of America. It is nothing new, and we must stop running behind the Democratic Party without demands. And for all of those who believe in reparations, number one demand of reparations must be free our political prisoners. And we understand the difference between political prisoners and those who are victims of a political system. They must be considered also, but number one, first off, free our brothers and sisters who gave it all for us. And if we can't do that, we are nothing.
All right, we've got to move right along. One of the things I want to say to our Jericho defenders who've been on the front lines for so long, you heard what Brother Stephen said about the history of the massacre in Buffalo. It is nothing new. But you also heard that they are organizing and they are fighting back. But what the people in Jericho want you to understand, and this is why Sister Ann went into such detail about what's happening to King, is that there is no remorse on the part of this government. All right?
Yeah.
This is a new political prisoner. And you see the type of treatment it's getting. And that is why she is going into detail to make you understand who we are up against here. All right. Without further ado, we want to go on
to... Can I say one thing about Eric King?
Of course.
Betty, when I was... They moved me like 49 times, you know, and that's one of the things like they do when they try to isolate you like that. They're trying to set this brother up, man. People should know that. They're trying to set him up. He doesn't have the time to be going into that joint, Lexington, you know, that Supermax out there. They're just trying to set him up to kill him, and people should know it. And he needs to have a lawyer. He's not getting mail and visits and whatnot. He needs to have a lawyer going in to see him.
All right. Brother Tom, your mic is open. Brother Tom.
Well, that's a call for all of the political organizations, lawyers, Lawyers Guild. People, remember that and get to the Jericho website. We need that. Thank you.
All right, Brother Tom, your mic is open, and thank you for waiting. And Brother Kazi, thank you for the update.
Thank you very much. I want to talk about what the hell is happening in Ukraine. Only one side is being reported to Americans, and it goes like this, that the Ukraine is a small, independent country and has the right to join NATO. However, it doesn't. Americans are not given the other side. That is, 10 years ago, the Ukraine had friendly relations with Russia. Russia was supplying cheap gas and oil to Western Europe, and this was considered a threat by the United States. The collapse of the USSR and the unification of Germany made this radical proposal that the former satellites that they would end its control over its former satellites in Eastern Europe, and they would even accept Germany's membership in NATO. The former Soviet satellites would be neutralized and demilitarized, and NATO would not extend into Eastern Europe. The United States accepted this, but soon reneged on this, and on the Russian proposal, and so now NATO completely surrounds the western borders of Russia, and it's no surprise that Finland and Sweden just joined NATO, as these countries have had a long anti-Russian history. When Nazi Germany invaded the USSR during the beginning of World War II, many in the western Ukraine collaborated with the Nazis, helping them round up Jews to be sent to the gas chambers. The descendants of these Ukrainians are now in a neo-Nazi government centered in Kiev. And the United States is using the Ukraine as a proxy war to weaken Russia and even get rid of Putin. The United States has been sending billions of dollars to the Kiev government, including heavy-duty weapons such as tanks and supplies, missiles to attack targets in Russia itself, like the one that sank a Russian warship in the Black Sea. Well, the United States succeeded in provoking Russia into invading the Ukraine, and Russia fell into the trap. I am fully aware that the Soviet Union and Putin's Russia have been dictatorships, but President Zelensky of the Kiev government, he wants to extend this war between the United States and Russia, because that's what it really is, a war between the United States and Russia, by having U.S. planes attack Russian planes over the airspace of the Ukraine. President Zelensky is willing to have his country devastated in this proxy war, and those who are those who are suffering the most are the Ukrainian people themselves, over 3 million have already fled their country. The New York Times have actually suggested that Biden has concluded that his policy in this this war has really failed. And Putin, for example, is more popular in Russia than he ever was before. And putting sanctions on Russian oil and gas has not prevented Russia from selling its gas and oil to China, India, and other countries. And now Western Europe and the United States have to buy much more expensive gas and oil from American oil companies, Saudi Arabia, and the Persian Gulf states. And since our economies depend on these fossil fuels, an unprecedented inflationary spiral is taking place in Europe, and especially in the United States. The price of gas is at an all-time high. Have you noticed how prices constantly increase on a weekly basis, playing havoc on an economy that is in deep decay? But capitalism cannot maintain itself without imperialism, and that means war. But what would happen? What would happen to this economy if a peace agreement were reached between the United States and Russia? What would happen if we did not sell weapons to NATO countries? Unemployment has already reached the levels of the Depression of the 1930s. But unlike that Depression, we have outsourced most of our industry to cheap labor countries, including China itself. So what would happen if considering that threat to China is considered a threat to United States security? I have not mentioned the other existential crisis, the climate crisis. Tornadoes and floods in the south part of the United States, and drought and fires in the western part of the United States. New York so far has been comparatively lucky with our weather, but we are entering the hurricane season, combating climate change has not been a priority in an economy which is dominated by the oil and the automobile companies. And TV comes up with these commercials desperately trying to sell cars to people who cannot afford them. And for people who cannot afford them, these commercials show, let them eat this toxic bacon cheeseburgers that they can't afford. And so we have this. I don't have a printer, but I would like to send you what I just said, and maybe one of you can have a printer, and you can get my email information and my address from either Ralph or Betty, and make me a few copies, and then I will take it in and make many more copies. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that history, Tom Syracuse. Always great to give us the history, the root of the problem. And as we have stated on this program for a year, that the American government is forcing Putin to go to war. You heard it on this program, and I've been told that for the last 13 years, people have been saying they are forcing Russia to go to war. Understand that this is a government that is intent on ending socialism. And it's not only ending socialism or communism over there. They don't want socialism here. How about a national health plan? Did you ever hear of that, which all industrial nations have? A national health plan. They're fighting against that. And it all comes in the same, under the same agenda. Capitalism as opposed to any type of social consideration. Sister Betty.
I just want to say the left that we work with has a phrase, the wars at home as well as abroad. The war abroad is to make us focus out there instead of looking at the war that is here. And the same war attacks all of us. It is not just the money that's coming from our school budget. We lost $1 billion in education money recently from our school budget. And what would you like to know about how many billions they are sending to the Ukraine? So Tom is right. It is not a war on the Ukrainians. It is a war on the working class here. It is one war, the war abroad and the war at home. Sister Audrey, your mic is open. We're opening up the mic to a worker who is also a member of the Garvey organization and a fighter for the community. It's an honor to have you. Please give us your update. And Brother Joel, please hang in there, and Brother Dennis. Sister Audrey, your mic is open.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Okay,
yes,
hi.
We can.
Thank you. Good evening, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph, and to all those on the panel contributing to today's stories, and to all those in Radio Land. I just want to say, although the mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, got 2 years extension, we have seen today's news with some parents protesting this approval, but they are protesting in a way where they want him to really have the 4 years. So they're asking for the governor to veto this extension when it comes on her desk. It's mostly a lot of Asian parents. A few black parents are in this picture. One of the things that came up from these parents is that there are gifted and talented schools with the numbers that's usually in a classroom. They believe that they're going to be taking less students now that class size has been reduced. So that is their issue. So also in today's news, I saw where Mayor Eric Adams endorsed the governor. And so this is what they do in this government here. They do for each other. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. They're not doing anything for the people. So I'm here again this week to let you know that as a Garveyite, and as a member of the Student Improvement Association and a member of the New York City Mayoral Control for to end mayoral control, I'm here to let you know that mayoral control handcuffs our school communities and leaves us powerless in the decision-making for our children. So parents, students, teachers, and the community, please call for a full audit, because we've sent lots of correspondence to those in Albany, and they've not done an audit of mayoral control from 2002 to present. And I just want to also say that Mayor Bloomberg is in the news, too. He's not pleased with the 2 years extension that Eric Adams have gotten, because you know what? He's been that voice, that gasp behind Eric Adams, so that he will get 4 more years so that he can get through all of these charter schools that's occupying our school buildings for free to all his cronies. And so, again, we say no to that. Mayoral control must be on the ballot now. If Chicago voters can be trusted to exercise democracy on mayoral control and school governance, then why can't New York City voters be trusted as well? No to commissions about us, without us. Representative rights holders, parents, educators, and the community must be equal, say, members of any and all task forces or commissions on schools. So, please, all those people out there, your stakeholders in the communities, please join the resistance at www.nycmayorcontrolnot.org. Again, www.nycmayorcontrol.org. New York City Coalition to finally end mayoral control, because this mayor needs to be recalled, and someone should sit there who knows what they're doing to bring everyone at the table. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for that. As she, you have pointed out that the coalition between the mayor, the teachers union, and the governor, they are in it together for the promise of smaller class sizes. And we, the people, should hold them to that. Not only smaller class sizes, but we must begin talking about democracy for teachers, those who say they care about that, and have a union for all of the teachers, not only in the public schools, but in the charter schools, and all of the charter schools should be turned back into the public schools. They're all one issue. So let's stay on this. It's going to be with us for a while, and we must fight to get these issues clarified and out in the open. They're all corrupt, the government, the teachers union, the mayor, and the political party, the Democrats. They're in on this to steal from our children. And we who elect those who they select for us are also responsible. We must wake up and do something. Sister Betty.
I don't want anybody to forget the collusion that Brother Johnny Stevens told us about that took place in Buffalo, and how they, even when we do select someone of integrity, they gang up and make the system take them down. So clearly we do not have a democracy here. Without further ado, we want to go to Brother Joel, and we're going to ask Brother Dennis to please be prepared to take us home. Brother Joel, your mic is open. We want to thank everybody tonight. We want everybody to remember to go to the Jericho website to help Comrade King, Steve King. Brother Joel, your mic is open, and we are going to ask you some space with Brother Dennis.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much for the honor of participating in this discussion and for all the work that you're doing. And I want to take the cue from Brother Ralph, who just mentioned the Martin Solstreich as a leading figure and revolutionary that emerged in Buffalo. And yes, he ran that bookstore, which is still there on that same Jefferson Avenue, which is sort of the 125th Street of Buffalo for people from New York City. At the time, I was living in Buffalo myself, and I remember the rebellion that took place in Buffalo, one of the long, hot summers, centered around Martin Solstreich's bookstore. It was a bookstore that had literature of all types of revolutionary currents from around the world. It had books from China. It was under some fire because it had books from Cuba, which at that time was supposed to be illegal. Imagine, you know, this country that talks about free speech. You can't have books even from Cuba, no matter what they say, but these books were very revolutionary books that the struggle in Cuba to the socialist camp around the world that was created by revolution and addressed the class struggle as well as all the racial struggles the struggles of women and uniting all the oppressed people. And so when that rebellion broke out, it was probably one of the most politically oriented rebellions in terms of the types of slogans that were on the street. I think the main one, if I remember correctly, was "Stop the War Against Black America." But you had all kinds of people that had emerged from that store, had read books there, and were bringing the revolutionary ideology on the streets of the city. In addition to the gigantic rebellion that took place, and again was very difficult for the media to cover because of the class conscious slogans that were also emerging there. Buffalo, incidentally. So anyway, I remember when Martin Suster, they raided Martin Suster's store, is what happened, and they planted dope in his store and accused him of selling dope out of that store. Actually, it had been an anti-drug center because he was leading a major campaign against the way that drugs make it impossible for the oppressed community to come together in a disciplined way and overthrow the system that they called drugs a form of biological warfare. And I used to go up to that store almost every night, and we used to have amazing this was before the rebellion broke out and during it. And then when Martin Suster was arrested on these brutal frame-up charges, we formed the Martin Suster Defense Committee. And that night, we got finished about 4 in the morning. I got home about 4:30, and that night was when I got arrested for draft resistance, which had taken place in May in Fort Hamilton in New York City, where my draft board was located. And they broke into the house at about 5 in the morning. They knocked the door down and stepped over it. And all I know is I was sleeping, and suddenly there was a flashlight shining in my eyes. And it was like what you see on the Untouchables: federal agents, let's go. And they took me down the stairs at gunpoint. My legs were shackled. I was handcuffed. They had agents, I'd say about 3 agents on every landing of the staircase. And across the street was, these guys were like all 6x6. And and across the street, they had another one. He was washing the same spot on the roof of his car. And another one that kept walking a little dog back and forth in front of the door. It was a major thing. And it was connected, at least by the timing, and by the quality of that kind of arrest for an alleged draft resister. Well, I did resist the draft at the draft board, and there was a little rebellion that broke out there before I was kicked out of Fort Hamilton and told them to return. But and later on, of course, was arrested and served almost 3 years in Buffalo, almost 3 years in Lewisburg over the draft resistance. But I have to say that one of the other people that came from Buffalo was Rachel Wolkenstein, and she was one of the few people that came to greet me when I came out of the initial arrest on that thing. Rachel Wolkenstein, of course, one of the hard-fighting lawyers for Mumia Abu-Jamal. And so it was and she also came from another family that had rebelled against the timidity of the left. They wanted to make it, it was called at the time the Progressive Labor Movement, and Workers' World, which I was part of at that time, had also rebelled against the cave-in of the Trotskyist side of the socialist movement. So it was this was a city that was very pregnant with revolutionary ideology and a revolutionary culture that goes back at least to the days of 1918, where there was the famous Buffalo trolley strike that developed into a general strike and was also associated, at least conceptually, with the same type of rebellion that took place in Seattle. It was after World War One. So,
wow, Joel, giving us history. It's just wonderful. You're an activist. Joel was there. Tune in again next week, and Joel will continue with this. And we have one more. We have to have one more person. Thank you, 10 million, Joel, for giving us history. Dennis, your microphone is...
And before, Dennis, we want you to know, we need you to join in on WBAI tomorrow at 8, 212-209-2877. We're going to deal with what Sister Audrey was speaking about, anti-mayoral control of education. You're going to take back schools. Brother Dennis, your mic is open. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Joel.
Next week I have a little bit more time. I'm going to make this quick. I want to read to you tonight Russia's defensive war in Ukraine, a challenge to the rule of the U.S. dollar. I was going to read that, but I'm not going to do it tonight. What I will say is that guns, crime, racism, and capitalism. Sounds like the United States to me. They did take Mexico at gunpoint, did they not? Yes.
They did.
I'm going to bring up two political prisoners to be, one political prisoner to be real quick, and then I'm going to bring you an update about Christopher Scheer, the murderer, executioner of Patrick Loyola. John Fitzgerald Johnson, impact leader, Grandmaster Jay, he's due in court for sentencing. He'll be facing 7 years on a charge in federal court on June the 21st. Stay in tune. Then he's got to go to court in the state of Kentucky, where Breonna Taylor was murdered at. Executed Patrick Loyola's murderer, Christopher Scheer, murderer, of course, charged with second-degree murder. No court date set yet. Out on a $100,000 bond, which means he got out with $10,000 on $10,000. And remember, Trayvon Martin's killer, George Zimmerman, was charged with second-degree murder and let go of that charge. So look forward to the same outcome when you talk about what's going on in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'll leave it right there at that, and hopefully I'll have more time on next week. Uhuru. Thank you.
We will start with you and Joe Myers next week. Thank you so much, my brothers and sisters. Thank you for being here. And we will continue this struggle. You're talking about people who made the history that we are talking about. And as I say, I play this over and over again. The program is archived. I have to listen to it several times to learn from my brothers and sisters who were there and did the work and are still doing it. The struggle continues. Good night, my brothers and sisters. Take care.